One reason I travel is to laugh at myself when I'm making mistakes. Now we're going to talk about faux pas. What mistakes have we made and how have we learned from them? Our phone number is 877-333-7425. And we got Lisa on the line from Everett in Washington. Lisa, thanks for your call.
Thanks, Eric. Hello. I'm calling about a faux pas I made on my first trip abroad when I was 20. We went to the UK, and I didn't have my hand gestures right. And I was excited to go buy a couple beers in a pub, so I gestured two, like a peace sign. And the bartenders behind the bar kept saying two or two to me, showing, you know, the peace sign and then kind of an L with her hand, and I didn't quite get it. And then I had the aha moment where I made the L with my hand and said two, and she put down a couple pints and made the equivalent American rude hand gesture for what I was doing with the peace sign and walked away.
So if you give a peace sign to a person at a bar asking for two, you're likely to get three.
You might get asked to leave.
Or you might get asked to leave, yeah. So the peace sign is a rude thing in England.
Yeah, the rude V gesture, you know, the inverted facing away from you.
So that's kind of like giving somebody the finger.
Exactly. I was giving her the bird.
So you're given two fingers, which is one finger on this side of the Atlantic. And also on the continent, if you give a V sign, they'd assume it's three because you start by counting with your thumb. If you want one of something, you hold up your thumb. If you hold up your first finger, they're going to assume you just didn't stick your thumb out enough, and they're going to think you want two of something.
Oh, I didn't know that one.
Yeah, so there's two. That's a double faux pas, because I've made the mistake many times where I hold up my first finger and I get two of something, because in Europe they'll start with their thumb. But of course, in some countries, if you go peace, you are insulting somebody very much. You know, that reminds me when I was in Iran, I was all excited when we were filming, and I'd always come back to our van and try to explain to our driver, who didn't speak very good English, how good things were going, and I'd give him the thumbs up sign. And finally he told me, Mr. Rick, when you make thumbs up like this, that's the same as the middle finger in America. So we have to be real careful with our hand gestures.
Well, and I believe the OK symbol is a bad one elsewhere too. So,
and it changes from one country to the next.
Yeah.
So in one country it could be okay, in the next country not. So it doesn't hurt to ask, does it?
Not at all.
So did you finally get the beers that you wanted there in England?
I did. I got the beers I wanted.
And that's what it's all about. So thanks, Lisa, for your call.
Thank you. Have a good one.
Happy travels.
Bye.
Carolyn, Astoria, Oregon, has learned some lessons in Turkey. Hi, Carol.
Hi.
Where were you in Turkey, and what did you learn?
Well, actually, I was in Turkey for 1 year and 3 days, but who's counting, back in June 66 to June 67.
Uh-huh.
So I was pretty young, too, and I learned a lot in that year. But the faux pas that I jumped into my mind were when I was in Diyarbakir, which is down near the Syrian border.
That's way in the southeast of Turkey. Yeah.
Exactly, yes. I was with a friend, and we were in Antep, and we were visiting with the family of a Turkish friend, a man named Mehmet. And Mehmet was pretty savvy. He used to hang out with Peace Corps people, and of which I was not one. And he invited us to come home with him. So we go to the home, and there's this great big courtyard and a small place where his mother did the cooking. His parents spoke only Turkish. My friend spoke street Turkish. I had about five words to my name, but you can do a lot with the hands and faces. So,
especially in Turkey.
And especially in Turkey. And so we stayed with the family. We slept on mats on the floor. And I was informed after our visit of these two huge faux pas that I had made. One was, as I walked inside the home, I stepped over Mehmet, who was lying on the floor, and just kept going. And no big deal. No one said anything. I didn't pick up any vibes. Later, I learned that stepping over someone when they're lying on the floor means that we dropped our sins on him.
Oh, that's a dirty trick.
And you can imagine how many sins I must have had being a woman, a Western woman, traveling around with a Western man, etc. So I dropped them on the son of the household. Very bad.
Yeah.
And the second one was, and since those days, I've been in many countries where I'm sure you're familiar with squat toilets, and these holes in the ground were outside of the living area, sort of a little a little cabinet almost. You went inside and did your thing. And I, being the good traveler that I was, always carried toilet paper with me. Big faux pas. It was considered extremely dirty to be using paper. One should always take water and rinse. And I would never have occurred to me.
You know, and to this day, when you look at even a modern construction in Turkey, there'll be a little tiny faucet next to the toilet.
Yeah. Well, that was the problem. In this house, which was relatively rustic, there was no faucet. There was no water at all. Or that might have given me a clue, but there was nothing. We were supposed to carry out a can of water to do that. But no one handed that to me. No one informed me. Now, Mehmet spoke fluent English.
Well, you were just screwing up right and left.
I was such a mess. You know, you learn these faux pas. Sometimes you learn them fast and you correct them. For example, when I was in outside of Kathmandu at the Tibetan Buddhist Monastery, I was very quickly informed that you do not sit with the soles of your feet facing someone. You just tuck your feet under you. Very simple. But who would know? So when you go to stretch your legs out, be sure you're not doing that. But in the case of my Turkey experience, I didn't learn this until probably a couple of weeks after we left Gaziantep, which is a fascinating place.
Gaziantep is a fascinating place.
Yeah.
It's even to this day, it's an otherworldly place, as you said, right in the border of Syria and a capital in that area. Considering the little cultural mistakes you made, did your Turkish friends forgive you or did they throw you out?
Well, first of all, the parents never said anything or did anything. It wasn't until after we were out of their home that our friend told us. And in fact, he told us when he was miffed at us about something else, he said, and when you were in my parents' house.
And furthermore.
Oh, my God.
Oh, boy.
So I thought, you know, really, you need to learn a lot more.
All
I'm a little older now. So
well, thanks for sharing.
Thank you. Take care now. Bye-bye.
Bye now. 877-333-RICK. That's our phone number. radio@ricksteves.com is the email address where you can share your travel tales and cross-cultural faux pas with us on Travel with Rick Steves. Margot in Redmond, Oregon emailed us and she writes, on my first visit to England, I noted that an American asked where the toilet was located. Surprised at her directness, I later asked where the restroom was. I was directed to what amounted to an upstairs sitting room, minus the necessaries. After that, I bravely asked for the toilet. You know, that's a good point. You need to just be direct in Europe, and it's quite easy to say toilet, and you'll be directed to the restroom. If you say restroom, that's our little nice way to put it, but I think it works better overseas to be direct. Lisa's on the phone from Hartsdale, New York. Hi, Lisa.
Hi, Rick.
Tell us about a lesson you've learned that you'd like to share.
I was traveling in Germany with my boyfriend, and I've been to Germany many times before. I have family there, and I speak German. And we were in Berlin, and it was actually my first time in Berlin, and it's just a wonderful, wonderful city. And we were about to get on the subway, and in Berlin, the subways run on the honor system. There are no... I'm in New York, and we're used to having turnstiles and gates and things like that. Well, there's no such thing in Berlin, because presumably people are going to follow the rules and pay for their ticket before they get on the train, then get on the train with a ticket. And the train was rushing into the station one morning, and as we were trying to get to a museum, my boyfriend persuaded me to, come on, let's just get on the train. We'll get the ticket at the next stop. And he's a very upstanding guy, and that's exactly what we would have done. And I'm too neurotic not to, you know, actually get the ticket. So I acquiesced as the train rushed in. And we jumped onto the train, and imagine my horror about 2-3 minutes later as we're rushing between stops, and a gentleman starts coming through the car asking to see people's tickets. We, of course, didn't have them. My heart was beating very quickly, and I was very nervous, and he asked us for our tickets, which we did not have, and he very politely but firmly said, well, you'll be getting off the next stop with me then. Sure enough, we were let off the train, not manhandled or anything, but still, it was clear what was happening. It was very embarrassing. And on the platform in the next station, the gentleman, I have to say, he was very polite and kind and was explaining in English, because my boyfriend does not speak German, and I, for whatever reason, my panic, I decided that the best thing for me to do would be, even though I speak German fluently, to pretend that I do not speak German and just sort of stand there silently. And my boyfriend, to no avail, of course, tried to say we were going to buy it at the next stop. And the gentleman said, well, no, that's not the way it works here. And do you really have to buy your ticket? And so we're charging you, I think it was, maybe it was 50 euros, which ended up being almost $100. But he said, and that gives you the ticket to ride the trains for the whole day now. So
you actually got a day pass out of that. I never heard about that.
We got it exactly. See, this is the silver lining that you always have to look at when you're traveling, right?
Well, that's
great.
Yes,
we did get a day pass out of it. But, of course, as we're standing on the platform and he's speaking English, and my boyfriend was getting flustered and embarrassed. And the funniest thing of all was that at one point my boyfriend, because he was just flustered and not thinking clearly, said to the man as my boyfriend's stumbling through his words, do you speak English? And honestly, I mean, he didn't even realize the guy was speaking English to him. So that became a joke afterwards. Do you speak English?
When somebody's talking.
And there were people circling us on this platform, you know, muttering about, oh, yeah, get these scoff laws.
Right.
And
well, you fell into the sort of the riffraff that freeloads on the subway. And they people can kind of, dishonest travelers can kind of factor in, well, there's a 1 in 50 chance I'm going to get caught, so I'll
right.
just ride this one. But, you know, all over Europe now, I've noticed there's the honor system when it comes to public transit, and they've just decided it makes more sense rather than slowing everybody down by having to show your ticket to some
right.
checker and pay for that. They just have plainclothes people checking randomly on the train cars. And, you know, there's a Murphy's kind of law. You'll never get checked unless you go onto one of these subways or buses without a ticket. And then, sure enough, the door closes, you got nowhere to go, and you've got two conductors coming at you from both ends.
And you see them coming at you. And I was raised in Catholic schools. I'm not so Catholic anymore, but I'm very, you know, conscious, and I really would have. You know,
I'm sure you're very honest.
We really were going to buy the tickets at the next stop, but it was so embarrassing.
You know, they don't cut you any slack. There's no excuse for tourist or language barrier.
I guess they shouldn't, but it was a moment where, you know, it could have brewed into like a nice little couple's argument there. Well, there was tense moments between the two of us after the guy disappeared, and once I loosened up again, we really howled in laughter.
Well, that's good. It's a nice memory. I hope you used your day pass after that.
Of course we did. Actually, do you know what? On my refrigerator right now, I have what's known as die Quittung in German. I don't know if you speak German, but I have it hanging on the door. It's from September 6, 2010, and it has the station, the U-Bahn number 7, the number 7, Meringenplatz. So, yeah, I have this as a souvenir, as a memory of...
Well, that's kind of a cheap lifelong souvenir then. There you go.
It really is.
We should remind people also there's two pitfalls here. You can walk right onto the trains with no turnstiles in a lot of cities. That doesn't mean it's free. That doesn't mean you won't be checked. And you can assume if you're a tourist going onto those trains without a ticket, you're gonna run out of your luck and you're gonna get
checked.
You'll run
out of luck,
and it's
right.
expensive.
Murphy's Law will catch up.
It's usually around $100, you know, in euros. And then the other thing is, a lot of times tourists will buy a ticket and not realize you got to stamp it before you get on a train or a subway or a tram.
Oh, that's right. You have to validate it, sure,
yeah.
in those little stamping machines.
And if you're riding around with a ticket that's not validated, it's just reasonable for the conductor or the ticket checker to expect that you were trying to freeload on the system, and they're going to nail you. Now, if you do get yourself on a car and were unable to stamp it for some reason, you need to, on a train anyways, you got to take the initiative and find the conductor really quick, and then he will write on it that you're okay, and he may or may not give you a little penalty. But if they find you, you know, it's like you're trying to steal from the system, and they're going to nail you.
Exactly. And it, like you said, the moment I saw them come into the car, it's like shooting fish in a barrel. There's nowhere to go.
There's your Berlin memory. Hey, Lisa, thanks so much for sharing your hard luck story.
Thank you, Rick.
Okay, bye now.
Bye-bye.
We're checking in with listeners like you at 877-333-7425 with tales of lessons learned and fun memories that linger from your foreign travels. You can also post your own tales of travel faux pas on our message board. It's in the radio section at ricksteves.com. Les in Miami, Florida writes, at a fine restaurant in Siena, we ordered the steak Florentine for two. It's the best steak we ever ate, but it was much too big for my wife and me. My wife asked for a doggy bag to take the rest home. The waiter gave us a very funny look and took it into the kitchen where we heard laughter, but then he brought it back nicely wrapped in foil. We only learned later that the doggy bag concept doesn't really apply in Europe, so I guess we were silly, low-class Americans to them. However, the leftover steak was delicious. And that's very true all over Europe. Americans are very accustomed to taking, you know, asking it in a doggy bag or put this in a box and I'll take it home. You just don't do that in Europe. I think the trick in Europe is you want to order less. Portions can be big, And don't hesitate to order one portion for two people if you don't want to waste food. But if you can't eat it there, don't plan on carrying it out. And Elizabeth in Sacramento has been running around in Mexico City.
I have, and it's a true story. Well, I was going to be the chaperone for two teenagers that are about 14, two girls. And I said, let's get out of the house. Let's go to Chapultepec Park, you know, and go rowing or something like that, just sightseeing. It started out mild-mannered, but what happened is we got in front of where you actually rent the boats at Chapultepec Lake, and there was like an animated figure. I guess there was a couple, but I mostly just kind of concentrated. There was one, Chicken Little. And what happened, all of a sudden, I don't know, somehow I got a picture taken with him. I didn't want a picture taken, and I do speak Spanish really well. And I thought, well, I'm not going to concentrate on this. I really don't want to buy it. And he was saying, okay, now, dinero, now, money, money. And I go, no, let me go row first, and then we'll talk about this.
So first of all, Elizabeth, let's first explain to people, describe Chapultepec Park. As I mean, Mexico City is vast.
Yeah.
It's like 15, 20 million people or something like that.
Right.
And then
yeah.
What's Chapultepec?
Chapultepec's kind of a green oasis in the middle of smoggy, busy Mexico.
And this is where all the families can take their kids, and there's all sorts of amusements going on and fun things to buy and eat and amusements.
Oh, yeah, everything kind of goes down there. There's also a beautiful castle on a hill overlooking this lake where you can rent boats.
And
mariachis, there would be mariachis.
The mariachis will come and play for you. And if you're a tourist, they just see dollar signs in a lot of cases.
I think they do.
So you got Chicken Little all over you. I mean, you pose with Chicken Little, and they're going to want some money.
he posed with me, let's put it like that. But we rode, we had a ball in the lake, and then we came out, and I thought, there's so many people. He won't recognize me. I'm not really tall. I kind of blend. And all of a sudden, he looked over at me, and he goes, "Phew, you." And I go, and then all of a sudden, I took off running. But as I was running, I was telling the girls, it's okay. I got it under control. It's okay.
So you and the two girls running through the park in Mexico City being chased by Chicken Little.
I'm running. Chicken Little's running after me. But the nice thing on my side is he had the big, giant bird feet. He couldn't run that fast. And then the two girls are running after him. But it was wonderful. At the end of all of this, when we're, you know, having a little meal, we said, wasn't that amazing? We lived through that.
The girls especially will remember that little episode for the rest of their lives. So one thing important is hoard small change, because you get in a corner and a lot of times you have to give a little money. And if you only have a big bill, which is often the case, good luck getting change back.
True.
All right. Hey, well,
it sounds
like
you have an aerobic workout in Chapultepec Park.
With a Chicken Little chasing you. It sounds like you enjoy Mexico City.
I do.
You know, a lot of Americans don't realize how easy it is to zip down to Mexico City. And I find it's a beautiful little escape in the middle of the winter.
Yeah, once you get to know, what makes me feel nice in Mexico City is all the different neighborhoods, like Coyoacán, Roma. Once I got that down, then I'm like, each neighborhood has a personality.
Yeah. So, Elizabeth, after being chased by Chicken Little, what did you have for dinner that night?
We had tacos.
very nice. Hey, well, thanks for your report, and we'll all be very careful next time we're in Chapultepec Park to look out for Chicken Little. Thanks.
Okay, keep up the good work, Rick.
You too.
All right, bye.
Bye-bye.
Travel with Rick Steves is produced at Europe Through the Back Door in Edmonds, Washington by Tim Tatton with Sarah McCormick and Isaac Kaplan-Wulner. Our website team includes Andrew Wakeling and Kate Mulhern-Graham, and our theme music is by Jerry Frank. When you're traveling, you can find out when other stations air Travel with Rick Steves. Look for our affiliate listings with Listen Live links in the radio section of ricksteves.com. And we'll see you next week with more Travel with Rick Steves.